If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the king of the Power Slam, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Kenny. How are you? You're still in New York City. How's it going over there? Are you enjoying your holiday?
It's great. Today's the last full day. Tomorrow is the day that we fly back. But yeah, it's been great. Last night went and saw Beetlejuice the musical, which was... I'd heard good things about it, but then I was kind of terrified because I am a big fan of the movie, with the Tim Burton movie, Beetlejuice. So I was kind of terrified about what it was going to be like, but they knocked it out of the park. They made it current, they made it political, they made it, funny, they had swearing in it, they kind of altered little bits of the story, but for the majority of it was the same. It was original music. But what you were with a couple of songs that you want in there if you've seen the movie, but it was great, and the actor who played Beetlejuice was incredible. And the woman who played, I mean, I'm getting quite niche now, but the woman who played the character that Catherine O'Hara had in the movie, you could tell that she'd watched Catherine O'Hara on the Netflix on the TV show Schitt's Creek, where Catherine O'Hara plays this kind of socialite woman who's got a very weird sort of put on accent, and she was doing little bits of that, which was almost like a little Easter egg to people who've watched that show. So yeah, can't say enough good things about it. I ended up getting tickets that were like $59.
Oh wow.
Which were partial view tickets, but they were in the stalls like row N, and there wasn't one thing that we missed. And they even had, Finn, a giant sandworm. So you've seen Beetlejuice, right?
I've never seen the movie.
You've never seen the movie? Wow. But if you have seen the movie, it did it justice, and it's one of my favourite films ever. So I was kind of terrified, but they nailed it. So, and then I saw Moulin Rouge, the musical, on Sunday night. That was brilliant as well. So two for two on the shows.
And you were at Madison Square Garden on Monday, right?
I was there on Monday and Tuesday for Raw and SmackDown. It was a very good time. It's funny. I had a very kind of interesting meeting with somebody at WWE there, which was fun. But when we were there, I was walking, from my seat down to the concourse to get a drink, and I had on the Wyatt Gym T-shirt. And as I was kind of walking out, there was these two guys, maybe in the early 20s, and one of them said, "Oh, hey, cool T-shirt," and I was like, "Oh, thanks very much." And as I walked away, I was just like, I was just out of sight, and I just heard the other guy go, "Hey, isn't that guy from?" And usually we go, "What culture?" And I just, you know, roll my eyes and go, "Oh God, I'm still known for that." But this guy went, "Isn't that the guy from Inside the Ropes?" And I literally went to turn around and go and say thank you to him, and I was like, "No, no, I need to experience personal growth." So I just walked away. But I was very happy that I was recognised for Inside the Ropes. So,
were you wearing your red bobble hat?
Not on Monday night. I did on Tuesday night. I had on one night, off the other.
Okay. Listen, well, it has become your trademark, hasn't it?
Well, you can always tell if I'm wearing the red bobble hat, then I've not had time. I've not had proper time to get ready, because it means that I've not been able to. Because my hair like slicks back and stuff. If I'm gonna have my hair sort of styled, I have to like do a full wash and a blow dry and all. It's a whole fucking process.
It's a big production, isn't it, Kenny? You know, it doesn't just happen, does it?
It doesn't. I'm like Diana Ross, just with a couple of less costume changes. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right. Oh, finally finished the Awesome Kong interview for Patreon. Sent that over to you on Tuesday, so people can check that out now. So I was pleased with that. Hope people will enjoy reading that. So apart from that, I've been catching up on my wrestling. So there's always plenty to watch. And starting next week, of course, there's going to be even more. And a couple of weeks after that, there's going to be even more, as we know.
And then on top of that, there's like, I think the NWA are filming their new TV on like September 30th. And there's loads going on. You know, I was somebody had pointed me in the direction of MLW, you know, Court Burrows promotion.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to interview Court for a while now and try and get it sorted. But I was reading one of the cards for their TV, and I've got to say it looked like a pretty interesting card. Like they had a War Games match with the Von Erich guys with Kevin in the corner. They had they've got a pay-per-view coming up where their card is Jacob Fatu against LA Park for the MLW title, Terry Hart versus Austin Aries for the middleweight title, and Tom Lawler against Timothy Thatcher. So I feel like MLW probably low-key has some really good stuff going on, but just like we never get a chance to check it out. So I'm going to maybe see if there's, at some point we can check out one of their shows.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some of it this year, and the one thing that they're really strong on is characters. Characters and stories. And
sounds like that kind of place.
Yeah, I mean, it's in stark contrast. You know, when we reviewed that Evolve show a couple of months ago, and we were like, where are the characters? Where are the stories?
Where is the pizzazz, you said to me?
Yeah, exactly. You know, where's the razzmatazz? You know, this is pro wrestling. And to me, MLW really delivers that. And it gives its audience a lot of different types of matches, you know, which many people in the business feel that pro wrestling should be very varied. We should have, you know, it should be like the, you know, the proverbial buffet with lots of different items on offer, lots of different types of wrestling action for people to consume and digest. Whereas Evolve just felt like it's match, 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 match. MLW is in stark contrast to that. So yeah, absolutely, Kenny. We need to review one of the shows in the very near future. Let's try and make sure that happens before the end of this month.
Yeah, yeah. Let's try and do something for sure. Because I think they're still going to have MJF when he's in AEW. I hope they do, because you know if AEW are only running once a week, you know it'd be. And I've heard a lot of good things about Jacob Fatu. I saw Tom Lawler live at the indie show I went to in Chicago. He was good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I mean, he's obviously former MMA guy. You can see he's obviously a real top athlete and really, you know, he's very realistic and also somebody who's willing to sell and who's willing to make everyone look good. You know, that's been my take on him. So, I mean, he's somebody who's a real talent. I think if he got into wrestling maybe when he was a bit younger, WWE might have picked him up. Maybe it's, you know, the fact that he's sort of, you know, he's not as young as he once was. That's the reason why he wasn't absorbed by their system.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I do have to make a correction here, Finn. And you know that this pains me to say that I was wrong about something. But I was, you know, I was so cocky to be like, ha, 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 Vince McMahon likes Cardiff, ha, ha, you know, making it, I stand corrected. Can't tell you how I know this, but apparently Vince McMahon loves Cardiff because wow. The WWF was like the venues, like the Motorpoint Arena, the first show they ever did was a WWF show and it sold out. And it apparently sells out every time they do the Motorpoint. So Vince is always like, how's Cardiff doing? So he is a big fan of Cardiff. I cannot quite believe that's a real thing. But all I can say is, trust me, it is true.
It's been confirmed and you are issuing your unreserved apologies to Vince McMahon for ever doubting him.
I am. I can't believe I ever doubted Vince. Why would I ever doubt Vince McMahon?
That's right. He's always told the truth previously.
Yeah, he's never done me wrong. It was me all along, Austin. Anyway, so one of the big news stories of the week, we did not think would involve Impact Wrestling, but it is. So there was talk last year of a deal between Anthem and Access TV, which is the channel that was owned by Mark Cuban. famous owns a football team. Do you know it in America? I'm sure he owns a football team. But he was on like one of the Survivor Series shows as well.
Years ago. He's a noted wrestling fan, isn't he? And HTNet, back when Ring of Honor was on HTNet, it was well known that he was the one who owned HTNet at the time.
Yes, so he owns the NBA team, the Dallas Mavericks. That's who he owns. And he also was the owner of Access TV. So he has sold that now to Anthem. Apparently, you know, at the time, he wasn't really up for selling it originally, but now I think he kind of thought there was value in selling it. And then one of the weird ties to it, I don't know if a lot of people outside of the US know who he is, but the famous interviewer Steve Harvey, you know, like the African American interviewer guy who has the mustache, famously said the wrong name on something at some point. Anyway, he's part of it as well, where he's going to have a content development agreement in it, and Cuban's going to remain a minority owner. But anyway, so the whole story is that Anthem wants to buy Access TV, which includes Access TV, HDNet movies, and also means that they get Access TV library of concerts, pro wrestling, and MMA content, which would have US broadcast rights to old ROH, which Carrie Silkin had done a deal with them on years ago, many years of New Japan, Women of Wrestling, which they show, and some other MMA stuff. I mean, you watch Impact a lot. We've had this discussion many times, but everybody knew that being on the Pursuit Channel was absolute death. I think the Twitch...
Yeah. That's it. Unless you're into hunting.
Unless you're into hunting. And well, I mean, maybe Brock Lesnar watches that channel, but, you know, the rest of us. But, yeah, I think...
I bet it turns Impact off when that comes on.
But apparently the Twitch numbers this week for Impact were, like, 3,200 or something like that. So it's very, very low.
Yeah.
And this is a company that 3 years ago were doing a couple of hundred thousand, I think. What do you make of the story? I mean, obviously, this is going... There's many facets to it, but let's hit the first one. If Impact Wrestling goes on to Access TV, you're a regular watcher of the show. I think you're only, like, what, a week behind right now?
I'm a week behind, yeah.
In its current format, is it Access TV ready, do you think? Or do they need to... Is there any changes that you think they need to make to give it that boost that it would need to be on a, I mean, Access, I guess, is a major channel in some ways. So what do you think in terms of the current output if they were to put it on tomorrow? Does it need any changes?
Well, if they were to put it onto Access, it's going to be available in a lot more homes than it is currently, right? That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, Access TV is available in 50 million homes. And to put that in perspective, like USA is available in about 89, TNT is available in about 93. I would say they're both about 90, so 50 million homes, not a bad shout.
Yeah, so it's a major upgrade from where they are at the moment, which inevitably is going to result in it drawing more viewers, because far more people, you know, stands to reason, have access to it. Access to it.
Fine on all cylinders.
So, I mean, I think they're ready. I mean, I think, I've said this before, I think Impact's putting out a really good product right now. Obviously, it's low budget. They don't really have that much money for stars. The production is sort of middle of the road at best. I mean, I wouldn't say the production looks terrible, but it's nowhere near WWE level. There's definitely a huge difference between Impact and AEW. You know, I mean, you watch stuff on the WWE Network, and obviously that's a lot better. I mean, NXT's supposed to have a different look to Raw and SmackDown, but it still looks big time, even in that small venue. Whereas Impact, you know, really doesn't, except for when it comes to the in-ring content, the backstage segments. I think the commentary is really good. I will say Josh and Don Callis, I think, are my favourite broadcast team in wrestling. I think they're really good. I find them very entertaining. So I absolutely think they're ready for any channel, really. And if they're getting an upgrade in terms of availability and an upgrade in terms of viewership, would that then result in them getting an upgrade in budget? Would their budget be increased? Would the Anthem say, well, hold on a minute, we need to spend a few bucks on this promotion to just upgrade the production slightly, so it's in keeping with the standards of this channel. And obviously that would be very welcomed by everyone in Impact Wrestling, especially if it also resulted in an increase in budget for pay and other things. I think they're absolutely ready. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the product. I think it's a shame that this company is doing as well as it is right now and so few people watch it. That's the great tragedy at the moment. So
I think, I mean, the thing that's kind of interesting is that, like, they obviously, Anthem bought access for the large parts so they could put Impact on there, right? That seems to be one of the major reasons.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like, because ROH, I remember you, what was the year? I'm trying to look it up while we're on the phone here. I'm trying to figure out the year that ROH got bought by Sinclair. When would that have been around? ROH Sinclair.
Maybe about 2010 or 11, maybe?
Okay, so say it was, yeah, 2011. So 2011 was when Sinclair Broadcasting got ROH. And there was all this talk about how, you know, Sinclair Broadcasting, you know, they're huge. They're such a conglomerate in America. And, I mean, I don't watch ROH regularly, but I've not really seen a huge upgrade in ROH's output in terms of production value. And
you know, no, you're right. I remember at the time, it really didn't change anything.
At the time that it was going to change?
Well, I don't know whether I did. I don't think I did do. I mean, this was kind of a difficult time for Ring of Honor 2011. You know, they were doing those internet pay-per-views and then they were having a lot of problems with those. There was a lot of problems with morale because many people there were not happy with Jim Cornette and other people in the management of Ring of Honor and the direction that the company was going in. So there was a lot of problems backstage in Ring of Honor, which were not as evident as at the time as they would be when certain people left. You know, so when you actually think back, did we think it was going to really result in them being a massive cash injection into the company so everything would be upgraded? Well, I don't know whether I really thought it would. You know, it was seemed to be a big story at the time. And I think there was optimism that things were going to change. I think it was more relief because people thought, well, the company's not going to go under now. It's got this big organization behind it that's got deep pockets. So it sort of secures its future. But as far as Sinclair investing a lot of money in it to try and make it into a bigger company than it was, I don't know whether that was something that we really thought was on the cards. We sort of, by that point, you really had to take a wait and see approach to it. Because, I mean, many companies that are successful because they don't spend money on things. They don't throw money. They don't put huge amounts of money into projects from which they don't think they can get a return. That's generally how people become successful, isn't it, Kenny?
Exactly. I mean, the thing is, this is obviously, well, we think this is going to be different because Anthem seemed to really be behind Impact. Yeah. Hence, they're buying Access. But for me, I mean, I feel like if they're going to be moving on to Access TV, then they should be spending a little bit more money on the way the show looks. I mean, I don't think the show looks bad, but you know, if you're Anthem and you own, and I'm not even saying you need to, I'm not saying go to a bigger building where it looks dead, but just shake some stuff up where it just looks a little bit different. Would be a good idea. The other thing that's going to be kind of intriguing to see how it plays out is that Access TV airs New Japan Pro Wrestling every week, and that deal comes up next year. I wonder if Anthem are going to be open to just continuing the deal as it is, with sort of saying, New Japan is on Access, or are they going to say, look, the only way that New Japan can stay on Access is if a deal is made with Impact, because New Japan have the deal with ROH. So how do you see that kind of playing out? And, you know, do you think that New Japan would be open to it? Do you think that Anthem would hold them to that kind of ransom? Or do you think that they would kind of just let them keep going as they're going? And this is more just about getting Impact on a bigger channel.
Yeah, I don't think they would start making any ultimatums like that to New Japan. I mean, why would they? I mean, if New Japan is basically contractually strong-armed into going into a deal with Impact Wrestling, that's not going to work long-term, is it? That's just going to cause resentment and bitterness, and it's just basically going to scupper it from the off. So I can't imagine that that would happen. I mean, New Japan's big enough that it's not going to be pushed around like that. Absolutely not. Especially now with its increased international presence.
Why do you think that? Because it's been clear for years that Impact want to work with New Japan. They've wanted to work with them for a while. Don Callis is the commentator at New Japan, but he's also head of creative for Impact. Why do you think that New Japan are so hesitant to work with Impact?
Well, I just think because of where Impact is on the pro wrestling totem pole, where it is in the overall scheme of things. I mean, creatively, I like the promotion. I think it's doing really well, as I've already said in this podcast. But in terms of business and in terms of accessibility, I mean, we know that's going to change. But I'm just talking about where we're at right now in terms of business and presence. It's beneath New Japan. So why would New Japan want to work for a company that by going into business with another? Why would New Japan want to work with a company that is not immediately going to enhance its presence and its status in the wrestling business? If a New Japan Impact Wrestling deal happens, Impact will be the beneficiary of that, not necessarily New Japan. In fact, New Japan probably wouldn't be at all. So I can absolutely understand why they would be hesitant to work with Impact Wrestling. I mean, you would think long-term that New Japan will want to work with AEW because they've got the TNT deal and they're starting October 2nd and they're going to be available in more than 90 million homes. So that's a huge upgrade for New Japan in terms of status to their fans in the homeland and to their fans internationally. So to me, I don't think they look at Impact Wrestling and say this company, the talent here, isn't good enough. I just don't think that they're big enough stars. I don't think they're on the level with New Japan.
No,
you know, that's right. And I think New Japan is going to want to step up. I think if they were to work with Impact, they would see that as a step down. I mean, I know working with Ring of Honor isn't exactly, you know, enhancing their reputation in the international stage. Because Ring of Honor just reeks of mediocrity. But the thing is, that's a pre-existing deal. You know, I would be very surprised if they were to extend that deal. They might, but really, is New Japan, given where it's at right now, going to benefit from a continued association with Ring of Honor? I don't think so. If they can put a deal together with AEW, I think that will be really big for them.
If New Japan can sort of, because I mean there's that mindset that the guys at AEW kind of screwed over New Japan a little bit.
Yes, well, there is that as well. Yeah, I believe there is still lingering heat there between the guys that used to work for New Japan, in particular Kenny Omega, and New Japan management and many of the stars there as well, in particular Tanahashi. I believe things were very bad between Omega and Tanahashi at the end, for real. Those two did not get along. So I think New Japan kind of feels a little bit burned that they invested all this time and all this effort into helping these guys become stars, or at least giving them the opportunity to become stars, and then they left to set up their own company. So I absolutely get that. But when it comes to business and long-term and status and, magnifying New Japan's worldwide presence and prestige, I think a lot of that heat and that resentment can be forgotten if New Japan wrestlers can appear on TNT either every Wednesday or occasionally on Wednesdays and on pay-per-views. I think that would be a huge, huge boon for New Japan's status in its homeland and worldwide. So I think that's the direction of travel for New Japan. They want to do the deal with AEW because that would be huge for them. I absolutely think it would be. I mean,
there's also an argument that, like, without Access TV having New Japan, would the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega's kind of style have got big enough that it brought about All In? Because there was a lot of people in the States getting to watch the shows. It meant that New Japan were able to come over and do those US shows that they did.
Sure. Absolutely.
So there's kind of like a trickle effect in some ways of like the Access TV deal actually bringing about a lot of the stuff that a lot of other people are now benefiting from.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing for New Japan in this scenario, Kenny, is that they are in demand, is that people want to work with them.
Yeah, they're doing a tour of the East Coast later on this month, I think in New York, Philadelphia, and some, I can't remember the third city, and then they're doing the West Coast again. Now they're doing the Tokyo Dome for two nights in a row, so New Japan's clearly, you know, going up. So the other thing I was going to ask you about...
Absolutely. I mean, if you think back to New Japan obviously had the relationship with WCW for many years, but that was, you know, New Japan was not in a position back then, even though it was more popular in Japan back then than it is now. New Japan was not in a position where it could run shows on its own internationally and draw crowds in the thousands. It is now. It's got an audience. So you bring New Japan wrestlers and the brand and you know, the mood that a New Japan show and the New Japan style conveys. When you bring that to a promotion, that immediately enhances the promotion because we're working with New Japan. It's not like, you know, was it Starrcade 95, wasn't it, when they did the matches between WCW wrestlers and New Japan wrestlers?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was actually a really good show. We had all these New Japan guys that really people in the States didn't know, wrestling fans were not aware of at all. And that show did very poorly on pay-per-view because people didn't really know who the New Japan wrestlers were, and at least in the States they didn't.
Yeah, it was Sting against Sasaki, I think it was. Sting against let me look. Yeah, it was the World Cup of Wrestling, Sting against Kensuke Sasaki.
I mean, there was Koji Kanemoto was on the undercard, and Shinjiro Tani was there, Jushin Liger was there as well, I believe. So, I mean, it was a show for hardcore fans. Wow, look at all these guys. And it was actually, the undercard was tremendous. But the New Japan wrestlers didn't really have that sort of status amongst a broad fan base in the States. They do now. So they're coming into a promotion. It's like, wow, we've got these New Japan wrestlers coming in. A lot of fans are going to want to watch. So they're coming into negotiation in a position of power. So I don't think New Japan is going to make any hasty moves, and I'm sure they'll do what's in their best interests, which at the end of the day, Kenny, is what every promotion should do.
I mean, I just quickly looked up Starrcade 95 there to just kind of have a look at it, and some of the matches on it look great. Like I've not seen the show, but it's got Liger against Benoit, it's got Kanemoto against Alex Wright, Lex Luger against Chono.
That wasn't a very good match.
Well, but my favourite is, so I'm just going to kind of run through some of the cards here, right, because it gets so funny. So there's Liger and Benoit, Kanemoto and Alex Wright, Lex Luger and Chono, Johnny B. Badd and Masa Saito, Otani and Eddie Guerrero, Randy Savage and Tenzan, Sting and Sasaki, and then Ric Flair, Luger and Sting in a triple threat, and then the main event of the show was Ric Flair against Randy Savage for the title. But what's more baffling to me, and I had no idea this actually happened, is that after the pay-per-view went off the air, Ric Flair and Randy Savage was not the main event. The main event was a US title match, a WCW United States Championship match, with Sasaki defending against the one-man gang, and the one-man gang beat him to win the belt?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I don't think New Japan was very happy about that.
You fucking wouldn't be if Akeem was beating your guy for the belt. Anyway.
So you think New Japan isn't going to be wanting to have to tolerate any booking like that in 2019?
No. But I was going to ask you, because obviously the Killer Cross thing with Impact has been around about him saying he's not happy with the... I mean, I don't think it's just that he's not happy with the pay. I think he's not happy about the idea that... I think he'd... From what I understand, he thinks that he'd taken a deal for a certain amount of money with the idea that he could do a lot of other stuff, and Impact are not allowing him to do a lot of the stuff that he thinks he should be able to do, whether that's other pro wrestling or things outside of it. Do you think that with Impact, if they want to get bigger, they have to spend some money? Because I know they're operating right now at a profit because they're running very low, and they're just kind of, they're not spending too much money on talent, they're not spending too much money on venues and stuff. But do you not think they kind of have to buy a couple of stars? Because, you know, we talked to MLW earlier on. MLW has five names who are more relevant than most of the guys in Impact. I don't mean that in a bad way, they're all talented, but like, do they need to buy some stars, do you think?
Well, I would absolutely agree. Yes, they do. I mean, you know, if as I said, if they're moving over to Access, maybe this could be like a milestone in the company's history. And it's like, okay, we're moving over here. Effectively look at it. It's not like a relaunch, but a sort of an upgrade or a, you know, a revamp or a remodel or or really just a boost to the status. And you can say, right, okay, we're in this position right now. We've got to come out swinging. You know, we've got this opportunity to be seen by a lot more people. Quite a lot of people will be checking this out probably for the first time. We need to give them something that's going to impress them and that they're going to come back for week two and week three and week four and so on. So, yeah, by spending some money on some stars, that would achieve that. The whole thing with Killer Cross, he's done quite a few interviews on this. I know he was very upset about the amount of money that Scarlett Bordeaux was paid by the company. She ended up asking for her release and she was granted it. I believe she received a tryout. Was it last week in NXT, Scarlett Bordeaux?
Yeah, she was at the Performance Center, so I assume she got a tryout.
Yeah, I mean, she's somebody I'm going to write about in my next What's Going Down, which I'm going to be starting later today, actually. And Killer Cross, I think, is a real talent. He's a super sharp guy, really intelligent. I think he looks frightening. He's somebody who could be a top heel in WWE. I'm not saying he's going to be, because, you know, we've been there before making predictions on people who can't miss, and of course he could miss. But to me, he's a really good talent. He's got great look. He's tattoos. I mean, a lot of wrestlers have got tattoos. And you think, why have these people got these tattoos? You know, these tattoos are not really enhancing this person's gimmick in any way. I mean, obviously, it's up to anyone if they want to have tattoos. But if you're having tattoos for career advancement in wrestling, then make them relevant. Kind of like The Undertaker's tattoos. He obviously didn't have any tattoos that were visible when he was Mean Mark Callis in WCW, becomes The Undertaker, and he has the tattoos that are in keeping with the character. And I think that's very true of Killer Cross. I think he's a real talent. I think he's somebody who can really go far. And I think for Impact Wrestling not to sort this out and try and retain him, is absolutely nuts. They need to get around the negotiating table with this guy. It looks really bad. You know, I think Impact are looking like the villains here. I think there was some bit of a hoo-ha because he didn't want a blade in his Slammiversary match with Eddie Edwards. I read that somewhere. I'm sure you read about that.
Yeah, he said he spoke to Tommy Dreamer about that and said that he didn't feel it necessary to do that. Which I think you can ask someone if they want to do it, but you need to respect if they say no.
Yeah, well, lots of people have got different opinions on that, so I'm not going to get into that now. But if he didn't want to do it, that's entirely up to him. And I thought he came up with a very novel way around it. I thought the fake blood from his mouth looked very realistic. So, I mean, he managed to comply with the first blood stipulation, put Eddie Edwards over really strong in what was an exciting match. So I don't think he can really be, you can't accuse him of not going along with the script. You know, he found, he improvised. He found a way, didn't improvise. He came up with a compromise. So, I mean, to me, that's a really petty reason to not allow him a contract release if he doesn't want to be there. And I think in the court of public opinion, I think people will be seeing Impact as the villains and Killer Cross, you know, ironically, as the babyface, the hero in this situation. But yeah, I mean, if I was Impact, I would definitely try and find a way around this situation that will result in Killer Cross remaining in Impact Wrestling, because I think he's a hell of a talent. I think he's got a lot more to give this company. You know, and if he leaves on bad terms, it's just going to be, it's going to be more sort of negative publicity for Impact and more people just looking at Impact as a company that's just rinky-dink, you know. In Impact's defense, I did read somewhere that I think it was on PWI Insider, I think they brought this story, that they're going to start paying for their wrestlers' hotel rooms or did do earlier this month when they were in Las Vegas. So, I mean, that was something. You know, that was something.
Well, because I think AEW are going to be doing that. Well, no, I don't know if I know they do it. They did it for the... They did it for like Double or Nothing and All Out and that kind of stuff. But, because the more that kind of stuff starts to happen, other companies might have to follow suit.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And it's I think it's pretty pathetic that in September 2009, you know, we're talking about this as like progress, you know what I mean?
You would think by 2019 that we would have gotten further.
Yeah, we absolutely would. But I mean, at least I think they did that for the Las Vegas tapings. And I believe that was the first time they've ever done that for the talent, for the entire roster. About time. And as you say, with Impact doing this, maybe this will put some pressure on WWE to do the same thing as well, which they should have been doing for decades, let's face it.
So let's move on to a couple of things. The reports that the AEW did around 101,000 buys for All Out over the UK and the US. I think they did 109 or 110 for Double or Nothing, did 101 for All Out. Do you consider that number a success, a disappointment, in the middle? What do you think?
I don't think you can really call it a disappointment. I mean, I think it's pretty good. Considering the lay of the land now.
Considering how much money you're getting in for that. It's not like you're getting $9.99 and $3 of that is going to a technology company. You know, people are buying a pay-per-view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the side effects, probably deliberately, of WWE launching the network, was to make it far more difficult for other companies to sell wrestling pay-per-views. Was that suddenly people are like, wow, you know, I used to pay $39.99 for a pay-per-view, but now I get all this pay-per-view and all this content for $9.99 a month. So suddenly what seemed like an acceptable price to pay now seems exorbitant as a result of WWE offering pay-per-views and all that content for a quarter of the price. So I think, you know, given where pro wrestling is now and the mood now, I mean, what are we now, 5.5 years into the network, launched February 14th. Yeah. So I mean, this is the norm now. This is, you know, standard. This is default settings, that this is, we only pay $9.99 per month for a pay-per-view. So I think for AEW to have drawn that many buys without TV, I'm impressed. I think that's pretty damn good. You know, I don't know what I read online that some people like saying, oh, it shows that this company is losing momentum, you know, that the second pay-per-view drew fewer buys than the first. But it's like,
how can you call over 100,000 buys for a pay-per-view in 2019 anything less than a success?
Well,
I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
We've got the WWE versus AEW feud between the fans of each company, haven't we? And it's like watching, you know, a political debate where people take sides and emotion overrules intelligence, as usual. So, you know, people are not objective. So, I mean, I think it's a good number for a company that's not yet on TV. I mean, one imagines that it can only increase from there. And I don't know, I'm not going to make any predictions about what they're going to achieve, because obviously they've got a hardcore fan base that is already aware of them because it's bought these shows and it's buying tickets to the upcoming television tapings. So there is obviously an audience out there who knows who they are. And things have changed in a sense in that social media and the internet now is more powerful than it's ever been. I mean, you really can't underestimate how important, well, vital this has been to the success of AEW. Well, you know, I mean, and TV, will they pick up a lot of new fans, casual fans, who will be willing to spend? Well, they're going to pick up some. You know, the million dollar question is how many. But I think it's a good start for the company. Absolutely, I do. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I think it's good. You're going to be able to tell more of how it's going to go by, like, see the next pay per view, Full Gear, on November 9th. By that point, TV started, so will people still want to pay that amount of money? But I think they should charge that amount of money, because like $9.99 is ridiculous. Like, I always think it's funny when some people say, you know, oh, WWE Network isn't worth the money. It's like you're on drugs. Like, look at how much content you get. Like, even the archives alone are worth $9.99, but you know, before you even bring in the original stuff. So WWE have given you so much for so little now that I feel like it was smart of AEW to just go, do you know what, we're going to put these pay-per-views out at $50, whatever it is, and £14.95 in the UK, and we're just going to say, this is the quality of what we do. We hope that you guys want to buy it. And people are buying it, so And I thought All Out was a bit of a return to form for them from the two pay-per-views that, you know, I didn't really hear anyone who thought that Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen were great shows. A lot of people were kind of down on it, but I feel it with All Out that they did a better job again, and I think it's kind of reflected in the numbers. You know, you got 100,000 people buying it. I think that's because it was a show that 100,000 people wanted to see. So, and you know, there's obviously now there's like so many other ways to, there's people who are going to pirate it and all that kind of stuff. So to still get 100,000 is pretty good, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it was, what were they charging? Was it $50 in the States?
$50 in the States on BR Live. I think Fight TV had the international rights to it, which was $39.99. And then ITV Box Office in the UK had it at $14.95.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there was a couple of kind of notes. So, obviously, this... I meant to tell you, actually, at the start, I was putting it now. So, the other day, I went to watch a taping of The View, the chat show here in America, which is like Loose Women, but they don't just talk about vaginas for the full hour. And... Because that's what we do in Britain. But just don't really sit and listen to Janet Street Porter talk about a fanny for an hour. But so it's got Whoopi Goldberg. And...
I've watched enough episodes of Loose Women to know that's not true.
Well, and it doesn't fit my narrative. So there was Whoopi Goldberg, Meghan McCain, and all that kind of stuff. And during one of the breaks, like there's like a woman who kind of goes around to get the crowd amped up and stuff, and she's asking these different questions and. There was an American girl who was going to be going to the University of Westminster to study, like this week. I think she went today, and they're chatting. So they're like, oh, you know, congratulations, hope it all goes well. And then they go down to the front. They're talking to these people, and there's a guy there from London, and the guy there from London shouts over to the girl who's going to the University of Westminster and apologizes for Brexit. To which point, Whoopi Goldberg and Meghan McCain are all told. That this guy apologised for Brexit, and they all had a big old laugh. And then Whoopi Goldberg said, "Well, it just looks like you're going from one pond into another." So Brexit, even a source of comedy over here. But there was so
we best not comment anymore, Kenny. Last time we went into this, we got ourselves into all sorts of trouble.
But so Madison Square Garden, in addition to having Raw and SmackDown this past week, are going to have the Triple A show on Sunday. At the Hulu Theatre, the smaller venue in Madison Square Garden. But recently, Cody went over to AAA and did a show. And did you hear about this? The chant thing at the end of the show?
So, yes, I
heard about it. Kane Velasquez, is it Velasquez? Velasquez? How do you pronounce his surname? Kane Velasquez, I think it is.
I think that's right, yeah.
Kane Velasquez was involved, and at the end there was a chant, a Puto chant, which I think Cody participated in, not really knowing what it was. And it's a kind of derogatory, homophobic term. And I feel quite bad for Cody because, like, I know the guy. He would never participate in that if he knew what it was. But it's just one of those things that, you know, unfortunately happen. So I don't really think it's something that he should be dragged over hot coals for because he very clearly didn't know what it was and, you know, has learned to not do it again. But we're in the outrage era, Finn, where you have to be outraged at everything and everything that happens online.
Yeah, that's right. The only good thing about the outrage era is that it moves so quickly that people have moved on to the next thing that they're upset about very quickly. So these things actually don't linger. That's one of the good things about the current era.
But they did put out a statement basically saying that Cody didn't, you know, obviously did not know what it was and wouldn't do it and stuff. But the person who, somebody else who was involved in that show that he was on in AAA was Kane Velasquez, who is a former UFC star, and there's made big talks that he's either going to go to AEW or WWE. He was on the MMA with Ariel Helwani, and he talked about, you know, he's talked to WWE, he's talking to Cody. What kind of move do you think he is going to make? What kind of move do you think he should make? Because I guess he's a pretty big name from MMA.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Kenny, he had a big fight, didn't he, Brock Lesnar?
He did, yes, he did.
He did have a big fight. So you would think that Paul Heyman, being the MMA fan that he is, would want to put that match together in a wrestling ring. So wouldn't surprise me if WWE were the ones who landed him. And given where he is and, you know, WWE's international status... that seems like a safer long-term bet. Because we don't know what's going to happen to AEW. We have no idea how long this company... Will this company be around 3 years from now? We've no idea. So you look at this Kane character, made a lot of money in UFC, got involved in pro wrestling. He's got a lot of miles on the clock. He's got a lot of miles on the body. So I would think he's going to want to go where the safe big money is and have that match with Brock Lesnar. Wouldn't surprise me if he's been in touch with Lesnar and asking Brock for some advice on negotiations and what have you, the rest of it. But I would say definitely WWE. Also, you know, you can do the stuff with Matt Riddle. There's a lot of people in they can do, obviously, the big match with Lesnar. Who could he really compete against in AEW? You know what I mean? There isn't really a natural opponent. There's not that many really big guys, actually, in AEW when you think about it. Whereas in WWE, there's loads. So, I mean, he could come in there as a heel or a face and do so many different things. So I'm predicting WWE. What do you think?
I think he might go to AEW, only because I think that I get the feeling that, you know, if he's doing stuff with Cody right now and Cody might be in his ear, that maybe that'll be... Because, you know, Lesnar's not going to be around a lot, so he's not really going to have that backup as much. I mean, if Heyman can get to him, then maybe. But I think it's just going to depend who can do the better sales pitch. Cody or Heyman, it'll be the two of them. Because I think Kane's done one match so far, and he was supposed to be really, really good. And he is doing a second match on Sunday in Madison Square Garden. So, I don't know a lot about him, but look at Ronda Rousey when she came in. MMA stars tend to do very well when they go into wrestling. So, and he's only, I think, how old is he? He's 37.
Okay.
So, you know, now's the time if he's going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, the thing is, it's a financial thing for him. I'm sure it is. I mean, he's going to be aware of how much money Ronda's made. I mean, we know she was very well compensated. We know Brock Lesnar's the best paid talent in WWE. So I think that is the reason why he'll go there. And just WWE is just a bigger company. You know, it's got that status. It's, you know, a household name. Everyone knows about it. And I think going there at this point in his career, I think going to AEW would be a risk because they'd probably want him for 3 years. You would think so, or at least 2 years. So by the time that ends, he's going to be closing in on 40. Would WWE really be interested? Will Lesnar still be doing this? Probably. But I just think right now, to me, it's got to be WWE. If I was advising him, I would absolutely urge him to start talking to WWE first and see what they've got to offer.
Well, he's also he's Hispanic. You know, they've wanted a Hispanic star for years.
Yeah.
He's probably got more chance of them doing something with him because you know what WWE are like. As soon as they realize you're famous in something, then you're 10 times more likely to get the push. So
absolutely. I mean, hell, he even brought Alberto Del Rio back that time for his second run, which was, as we know, was a bit of a disaster, really. And there were stories going around that he was getting paid, was it close to 7 figures or something like that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was outrageous how much money he was paying for that second run, which was really a flop. And I just think, you know, this Kane character can be a much bigger star in WWE than Alberto Del Rio ever was and probably cause them a lot less problems.
So let's move on to Raw and SmackDown at Madison Square Garden. Let's talk about Raw. What did you make of the show? I've not watched it back on TV. I've only seen it from a live perspective. So talk me through how it came across on the telly.
Yeah, I thought it came across really well. Maybe even, I don't use this word lightly, fabulous.
You very rarely call something fabulous.
No, I really enjoyed the show. I mean, that opening segment just set the tone. I mean, it just felt like, you know, it felt like old times. You know, Seth and Braun Strowman and AJ Styles and Kyle Anderson and Luke Gallows came out. Steve Austin was, of course, the central figure. He'd opened the show. He talked about a match with Bret Hart. Talked about stunning Vince McMahon on the famous September 22nd, 1997 episode. Then he told the story of Undertaker accidentally KOing him in their match at MSG at SummerSlam 1998, which was partly why that match didn't really live up to expectations. And really quite a funny anecdote there about what Earl Hebner said to him. A redacted version, I think, of the story, or a censored version of the story there. So, I mean, Austin was, you know, over like a, like 1998. Well, maybe quite not to that level, but hell, people love the guy. So they did the contract signing with Seth and Braun Strowman. They talked up the tag team title match and then their universal title match, which is going to take place at Clash of Champions this Sunday. Intense heat for that. Oh, it was really well done. Then AJ Styles, Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows came out to interrupt. Now, to me, this was AJ Styles' best ever performance on the mic. I mean, I know a lot of people say this guy can't really talk. I've always thought that AJ's all right when he's comfortable with what he's saying. He can be a bit stiff when they give him stuff that he doesn't really believe in. But when he's saying something that he wants to say, I don't think he's such a bad promo guy. He's taken a lot of stick over the years. But to me, this was AJ's best ever performance. Came out, mocked Austin, even impersonated his catchphrases. And the padding to Steve Austin in the ring, and Steve's just loving it. He's just loving this heel mocking him because, of course, he knows where it's all going. So the heel's building up the heat. The heat's rising. He's cranking up that heat. And it all ends in a big brawl. And then AJ and Austin are left in the ring together. Austin hits the big boot. This stunner that Styles sold fantastically. And then, you know, that's it. And Austin stands tall. I don't know. It would be hard for me to really name a better opening segment in WWE this year. I mean, I thought it was that good. I thought this segment achieved absolutely everything it set out to and more. I don't think it could have gone better. What was it like seeing it live, Kenny?
I mean, it was a great experience live. Austin was so over. I think with AJ, I mean, you know, Sandra brought up an interesting point yesterday, and I think because she's not as old school a fan, I get where she's coming from. She was kind of like, she wasn't thrilled about sort of AJ Styles being the fodder for Austin. And I do think that, I think it was fine here, but I think that if they're going to bring Austin back more regularly, they need to come up with something else for him to do, because Austin's so great. Like you say, everything you said about this opening segment, and if he say Austin's going to be around once a year now, or twice a year, because that seems to be the way it might be going. Because when was the Raw reunion? Maybe 6 weeks ago? Something like that?
Yeah, was it late July, wasn't it?
Yes, it was late June. Late June, I think it was. Yes,
it was late June, sorry.
So about a month ago, 6 weeks ago. If Austin was to come back and do something similar to this again in November, December, I think it would start to feel stale. And he's always been the act who doesn't feel stale. He's always been the guy who manages to make it feel different. So while I think it worked, and the crowd in Madison Square Garden loved it, and you know, everybody was going crazy for it, I think that if he comes back again within the next kind of year, I hope they have something. Because the thing was, like, it didn't really feel like the contract signing needed moderated once he got there. I mean, maybe that's because he was just, you know, the whole Braun Strowman was saying Steve Austin's going to get these hands, and then Braun Strowman was just like sucking up to him, you know. So it was this weird kind of thing where it all worked well, but a lot of why it worked well was the charisma of Steve Austin and how he was able to, and like you say, him being so great lifted that so high. And I think that it'd be good if they could have some of the current guys get to that level of reaction. But in the building, it was brilliant. People loved it. Austin still looks exactly the same. How does he look the same all these years later? Like, most other people from that era look horrific. I saw Gangrel live a week ago. Looks like a bag of shite. But Steve Austin somehow just looks very, very much the same. So,
Kenny, we need to know, was Gangrel wrestling on this show?
Yes, he was.
Was the match he had better than the one he had with Taka Michinoku?
I mean, it was against Orange Cassidy, and while Orange Cassidy's good, it didn't hold a candle to Taka. Taka still deserves an MBE for that performance. He made us question Gangrel's ability. He made us question, had we just misremembered it? Was maybe Gangrel a masterclass in technicianship, or
But the Taka illusion.
The Taka illusion. And the answer was, it was all Taka. talk to me about what else on Raw.
I do know what you mean about Austin, and I do kind of understand what Sondra's saying there. But to me, this was kind of a nostalgia segment. There was a lot of nostalgia in, and all these other stars were invited to, you know, dine at Austin's table. And he was the one who really put the gold standard on this segment. And had he not been there, it would not have gone down as well as he did. And, you know, I thought Styles was great, imitating Austin and mocking him, even called him an old fart. The fans were there playing their part. You know, chanting soccer mom at Styles, which I think is, I don't like that many chants, but that one doesn't amuse me, the soccer mom hairstyle. And I bet everyone who was involved in that segment will look back on that as one of the highlights of their year. And I don't think Styles was devalued in any way by taking that stunner, because he's gone as far as he's going to go in WWE. I mean, we know that. He may have another heavyweight or possibly a universal title reign. But if he does, it will just be a transitional one to put someone else over. So, I mean, he's gone as far as he really can. He's peaked, but he's still relevant and he's still a really good performer. So, to me, Styles was not harmed at all by taking that stunner.
What were the other highlights of the show? You messaged me something, and I've got to disagree with you. So you had said to me that it kind of fell apart when Lacey Evans and Natalia were out there. I thought Lacey Evans showed improvement.
Well, I think I was more just watching it in that we had the CM Punk chants, you know, which is one of the chants that I really don't like. I think what it was everything on the show prior to this point had been very well received. And then Lacey and Natalya came out and it was just like, people like, why is this match happening? We don't really care, which just shows you how much of an emotional connection they have with Natalya, because she'd obviously been wronged by Lacey, you know, that the dreaded handkerchief attack. I mean, never mind the Sheik, you know, never mind Purple Haze, Matt Lewin, all these other Abdullah the Butcher, all these villains of the past and the dastardly tactics they got up to. Lacey Evans with her handkerchief. She's on the Rogues Gallery Hall of Fame for that one. So we had Natalya coming for revenge. Fans, to me, weren't really that bothered. And I just thought, you know, Natalya just won from out of nowhere with a sharpshooter. I just felt the result was counterproductive. As you say, Lacey, it seemed like she had made improvement. I thought she looked better in the match with Natalya that she'd won. She definitely looked better than she had previously. And I thought she did quite well here. And then she just lost from out of nowhere. There was no real setup for the finish. It was really awkward and clumsy the way it came. It was just, you know, I've written here, looks like Evans is now back on the main event scrap heap. So to me, yeah, prior to that, I thought the show was really good. Bayley and Sasha Banks versus Charlotte and Becky Lynch was got to be the best. I'm trying to think of another women's tag team match in this company that's been up to that standard. And I'm having a hard time naming one. Can you think of one, Kenny?
No, I think it was the best. Everybody was into it. Everybody loved the match. I mean, also shout out to Bayley's Macho Man NWO jacket.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, and Charlotte did not turn on heel on Becky Lynch afterwards. Charlotte scored the pin on Bayley with natural selection, which was, you know, the right outcome, because, of course, Charlotte is challenging Bayley at Clash of Champions this weekend. So I really enjoyed that match. I thought there was a couple of rough moments, and I'm not really convinced by Sasha's selling. I think that's the part of her act she really needs to work on. I just don't think she really puts her heart into it. But I mean, overall, really good tag team match. Rey Mysterio versus Gran Metalik, even that was a good match. Fans weren't really into it at the start, but it picked up. There was a really nasty spot in it where Metalik landed on Rey's head when he did like a flip dive out of the ring. Rey's neck bent to the side. He showed it on replay numerous times. Looked to me like Rey was pretty shaken by that. They did slow the match down to allow Rey to recover. Rey, of course, scored the win with the 619 and Frog Splash. But, I mean, I thought this was a Metalik's best performance and best match to date in WWE, at least his best match in terms of status. I'm sure he's had better matches on 205 Live. But in terms of before a larger audience in terms of atmosphere and in terms of significance for his career. I think this was his best match in the company to date. And I thought it was really good what Ray did for him afterwards, shook his hand and kind of bowed to him. And just felt like a win-win for both of them here. So really enjoyed that. What did you think of that match, Kenny?
I would have loved if it had an extra 5 minutes, but I think for a six-minute TV match, you couldn't really have done much more. Like and it was nice to just see Rey Mysterio and another mass wrestler get to kind of do some stuff in Madison Square Garden, and it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable for what it was. I wish it got more time, but I think that it did the job, and it proved that Mysterio can still go and should be put in a position where he can.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a different type of match as well to the match we normally see from him in WWE. I've written here that this match did more to get Metalik over than every Lucha House Party match combined.
What's the common denominator there? No Kalisto.
So we had the King of the Rings semi-final, Baron Corbin versus Ricochet versus Samoa Joe. I mean, this was another really good match. Another Scorchio match. There's a reference for people, maybe fans of Carolina Hearn.
We're in this weird position where I think Baron Corbin has now kind of gotten good, because he's now been involved in a few matches where I think he really has improved.
Well, I mean, is this, you know, could this be like the Taka illusion?
Well, it's happened a couple of weeks now. It's a couple of matches in a row that it's happened, and if he can find a way in ring to match up to the sort of the character and the music and the finishing move, then I think he's got. I mean, do you think between, because it's Corbin and Gable for the King of the Ring next Monday?
Yes.
Who do you think should be the King of the Ring, and who can do more with it?
I don't know. I mean, probably Corbin. I mean, I was going to talk about Chad Gable. Shall I just say what I was going to say about him?
Yeah, just go for it now.
A little bit later. I mean, the thing about Chad Gable is we learned on SmackDown that his scheduled opponent, Elias, was injured, suffered ankle injury, broke ankle, I believe. That's what they said on the show.
Yeah, it is a legit ankle injury that he was pulled the day of when they just realised he wasn't fit to wrestle.
Okay, so backstage, Shane McMahon revealed to Gable that Elias wasn't going to be able to wrestle him. But then Shane said to Chad that he didn't want to buy into the final. He wanted to earn that spot in the final. And then Gable sort of agreed. And I just think Chad is this like antiseptic character. It's just so nondescript as a babyface. I mean, he's a real talent. But as a heel, he's got a real swagger to him. He's a real cockiness. And you could say, well, he's too small to be a heel. Well, I don't think he is. I mean, I just think this character is kind of like a bit of a 1980s sort of babyface character. So I'm not sure what he can really do as a babyface character. Because obviously he ended up beating Shane McMahon in the main event. But that match was really more about Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon, because Kevin Owens had been installed as the referee. So it was more about the interplay between Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon, and Shane McMahon losing rather than Chad Gable winning. And there is a big difference there. So I'm kind of, I never thought I would say this, but I'm kind of rooting for Baron Corbin. I think he could do more with it than Chad Gable. I never thought I'd say that. What a world we live in. Yes. Yeah, so what else was there on then? On Raw.
There was the 10-man tie that kind of took up the last bit of the show, which I don't think people were as into, because, you know, like I think the thing they did in this show, which, to give them credit, is they are featuring newer people. You know, they are featuring the Viking Raider War Experience and Cedric Alexander, but those guys aren't really that over yet. So you have a match where people aren't really that into it. But at the same time, they are featuring new people and giving time to people who kind of need the time on TV. So I understand why they did it, even if it wasn't a blow-away main event.
No, I mean, the Alexander, he scored the pin on Styles after the lumbar check. They made sure to mention that Styles had come into this match after taking the stunner, which was, you know, huge respect to Steve Austin there, that the stunner's so devastating that, you know, 2.5 hours later, Styles still hadn't recovered. You know, if only they did that with everyone's finishing move, Kenny.
Definitely.
Somebody's finishing Yeah, other finishing maneuvers may get over as much as Austin Stunner. Maybe not quite to that level, but certainly more than they are now. So I enjoyed the main event, and I enjoyed seeing Alexander score the pin. I'm still not convinced that this guy can really become a somebody in WWE, but they're trying with him. There's consistency here. This is not like the, you know, bad old days of earlier this year when they give, you know, pushes would start and stop after like a week or 2 weeks, and it was almost impossible to have faith in anyone because you never knew who was being pushed and who wasn't. Mind you, actually, the flip side to that, Kenny, was what happened on SmackDown to Andrade and Ember Moon. So, I mean, Miz versus Andrade, we had Shinsuke Nakamura on commentary.
I did like how the Miz was clearly putting in an absolute shift, going full pelt, giving it 110%, and you could tell that Andrade was on like 36% in comparison. Like he was just taking it easy because like they're so, you know, God bless the Miz, but they're different level. But they tried.
Well, I mean, to me, like Andrade's had those really good matches lately. And, you know, now I'm actually contradicting what I've just said about Cedric Alexander. And sadly, you know, the reverse of what I've just said about Cedric Alexander is going on the very next day on SmackDown. With Andrade, somebody that we apparently can believe in, is somebody who will be a star and is worth our emotional investment and our belief. And here he is putting Miz over in basically a nothing match and working as a setup man for the Miz versus Nakamura match. I thought Miz's offense looked puny. I mean, Miz was, you know, out there and he was rushing around, but he did not look good in this match at all on TV. He absolutely didn't. As you say, Andrade was like, he had his I'm doing the job head on and wasn't really that bothered, which is not a good sign. That is not a good look for a pro wrestler. And it is something that is noted in WWE. You better go out there and do the job and you better be happy doing that job. You know, you better come back and thank us for giving you a job here. Mm-hmm. And then Nakamura comes in. And I mean, this Miz Nakamura match, I couldn't be let. I mean, it could be the least interesting match on the Clash of the Champions show. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on with Andrade. And same with Ember Moon as well. I mean, I guess we haven't really been given reason to believe in her, whereas we had been given reason to believe in Andrade in recent weeks, because Ember Moon lost really easily to Bayley. To the, you know, the Bayley to belly 1-2-3, and it just feels like Ember Moon is just another placeholder, is somebody that we can't really believe in. So that's a shame. So that completely contradicts everything that I've just said earlier.
The thing about wrestling is wrestling can be completely contradictory, you know, because in some ways you can go, that doesn't make any sense, but then if you really enjoy something, it doesn't really matter if it makes sense because you enjoyed it. So but yeah, I mean, I thought Raw and SmackDown were pretty good shows overall. Yeah. I was happy with them. They ended up having Bray Wyatt wrestle as The Fiend after shows went off the air, after 205 Live and SmackDown went off the air, so that was good. I wonder if they'll be back to Madison Square Garden soon.
How many? I mean, obviously the Monday night show was sold out, but the Tuesday night show was not sold out. But it did look like there was a good crowd there.
It was a decent crowd. I think that the number I heard reported was about 7,000.
Okay.
I'm intrigued by when SmackDown goes to Fox, because it's not really going to feel like the B show anymore. And then I also wonder, is a Friday night a better night to sort of do a live, you know, wrestling show? Are more people going to be able to come? Because there is people on maybe a Monday or Tuesday night who go, oh, I don't really want to go to a wrestling show, but I'm in the building till 11 p.m. and then I've got to work the next morning.
Sure.
Like maybe a Friday night out. Is that going to help SmackDown Live attendance? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I know over here, over in the UK, it shows, I mean, literally no company runs during the week in the UK for the most part.
Yeah.
Like everybody runs at the weekend. So I'm curious to see if that change of night will help the live gate for SmackDown. What do you think?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the thing is, I mean, I remember when, you know, Monday Night Raw went live for the first time was launched back in 93. And a lot of people was like, well, they're not going to draw on a Monday night. Oh, you know, they've got to do this on a weekend. And then you go back to the glory days of 98, 99, 2000. And they didn't sell out every week, but for a while it was nearly every week. And no one cared that it was on a Monday night because they wanted to see this product. They wanted to see this company. They wanted to see the cast of characters that was so over. And they didn't care what night it was. So I think sometimes that's an excuse. I mean, obviously people had work on Tuesday, Kenny, and they went to see Raw on Monday. So one question I've got for you.
Mm-hmm.
Did they advertise locally that The Undertaker would be on SmackDown?
Yeah, there was heavy advertisements across the city for both.
Okay.
And Undertaker was the main sell for SmackDown and Austin for Raw. So.
All right, we knew about Austin because that had been pushed heavily on Raw the previous week, but I don't recall them mentioning it on TV that The Undertaker would be on SmackDown.
I think they did mention it. They definitely mentioned it last week on one of the shows.
Okay.
So they had made, but I think the Austin one was pushed much more heavily. But
of course it was.
But yeah. So, well, listen, that's it for us on the main podcast. We're going to go over to the Overrun, talk a little bit about Clash of Champions, announcer changes, 205 Live. And Hellcat Haggerty. So that's
Chris Tarrant.
Oh, we will talk about that. So head over to patreon.com/insidetheropes for tons of bonus content. I want to thank everybody who has pledged on our new levels. Great response from you guys and your pledges. So the one thing I will say is if you're pledging, Patreon very annoyingly does not. Like, if you used to be on the $5 level and now you're on the $10 level, it doesn't automatically give you access to all of the content between November 2018 to September 2019. So basically, I need to manually go into all those updates and sort of add in the higher levels, which I've been doing the last couple of days. I'm actually doing it while we're recording, so I'm all the way back now to the beginning of April. So you should have everything from April to September. The only time frame that's missing right now will be November 2018 to March 2019, but it should be done by tomorrow. So, but want to thank everybody for pledging. Also, go to youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content, interview with Big E up there. Tons of stuff on there as well. What about you, Finn? Where can people find you? Give us the plug for your website that you've not updated.
Oh, I'd just like to say also, I'd just like to thank everybody as well. We absolutely do not take you for granted. You know, we really appreciate your pledges. Yeah, people can find me online on my website. It's finleymountain.co.uk. Finn.
Okay.
Look at this. I thought I was doing all right on this podcast, and now my mouth stopped working.
Is it by any chance finleymountain.co.uk?
I'm nearly 50 and I still can't say my own name. This could well be my last podcast.
This is it. Next week you're being replaced.
It's finleymartin.co.uk and on Twitter it's @finleymartin.
You said that so effortlessly. Oh no, I'm fucking up. Okay, anyway, that's karma. Okay, so we're away to record the Overrun. We hope you have a good week, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I'm sad tonight.